Hi, I'm Amit Sharma at the All In Food Studios of the Food Decisions Research Laboratory at Penn State's School of Hospitality Management. Welcome to this pod from our studio facility in the Merit Foundation building of the School of Hospitality Management. Food insecurity on college campuses is unfortunately a well-known phenomenon. Some of the more recent studies have found sobering statistics, indicating as many as 1 in 3 college students facing food insecurity nationwide. A 2022 survey conducted at Penn State also found that within the last 30 days, 14% of the responding students indicated they had not eaten for an entire day due to being unable to afford food. The big question is, how can we address this food insecurity challenge on our campuses? Some of the ideas that have emerged include establishing the need to understand the magnitude of the problem, and also enhancing or expanding availability of institutional resources. Others include such as targeting financial support, building awareness of food insecurity, and also making policy changes that will allow students to enroll in federal support food support programs. Alas, there may not be one solution that fits all campuses. And more importantly, there could be solutions that emerge based on local realities. Also, we could learn from each other's experiences and create solutions that best fit our needs. So in this part, we are hoping to do just that. Speak with individuals who have taken upon themselves to address this food insecurity challenge on a college campus and have done so based on local realities of this challenge. For this discussion, I'm delighted to welcome back Ms. Leslie Pillen, who is the Associate Director of Farm and Food Systems at Penn State University. Also joining me today are James Alamia, who's a junior majoring in chemical engineering with a minor in environmental engineering and global and international studies, and Rebecca Durbin, who's a junior majoring in environmental resource management in the environmental science option and pursuing minors in horticulture and environmental engineering, both at Penn State University. Welcome to you all, and Leslie, welcome back to All In Foods. It's a pleasure to have you on this pod.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so and Leslie, given a little bit of the context from our prior discussions about how student farm is the space that is led by students as a student club. And has become an important component of addressing food insecurity, and not just food insecurity, but even providing food to on-campus facilities. So I wanted to start with you just to put that context on our discussion today. Can you remind us and tell us a little bit about what's the purpose of the student farm?
Sure. The student farm is a physical location on our campus. So it consists of 4 acres of land at the University Park campus, and we grow what we would call diversified vegetables on that farm using sustainable practices. And it's very diverse. Like, there's over 90 different varieties of vegetables, herbs, cut flowers, a little bit of fruit, and some other specialty crops that we grow on the farm. The mission is really around hands-on education about food and agriculture, so students get to learn about the farming practices and grow crops on the farm throughout the year. And then we distribute the crops through various outlets across the campus community.
So just to reemphasize, the student farm is run by the students, managed by the students, obviously with support from full-time staff. And then also is one of the missions is also to create that engagement of student experience through the academic experience as well, right?
Yeah, both academic experience as well as co-curricular and extracurricular experiences. So as far as students running things or leading things, we have an annual cohort of interns who are trained in managing the farm and get to run the farm operations throughout each growing season. And then our second major area of student leadership is with Student Farm Club. And those are the students that really are at the forefront of planning our events and other programming across campus that really expands our outreach, much beyond just the farm itself.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Leslie. Jimmy, I'm going to turn to you and to Rebecca. You got involved with this project that you were working on. Tell us a little bit about that, and then there's this space on Penn State campus called the Lion Pantry. What happened? How did you get involved with the project, and how does this Lion Pantry figure into the project?
So Leslie and I believe with Vancey, we were brainstorming over the summer or before the summer started, like the spring semester of 2022.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. Tell me who's Vance, and for the parts for the audiences who are listening.
I spoke with Leslie and Vancey Peacock, who is the executive director of the Student Farm Club,
Okay.
and I spoke with both of them, and we were just kind of brainstorming food insecurity projects because I wanted to get more involved with food justice. And Leslie told me about the opportunity for the farm stand and how she thought there would be kind of donors that would be interested in funding a project like that. And then from there, that kind of sprouted my motivation to go and talk to more people about, like, in the club, about what they think, about what they think about volunteering for something like that. And then eventually, I budgeted stuff for the farm stand with the grant that Leslie helped us obtain from a community member. And basically from there, we just planned to do it in the falls with produce that was at the farm in excess.
Okay. All right. So we'll get to the details of the project that you then created. But before we do that, Rebecca, what tell us a little bit about what the Lion Pantry is and what does that do?
Well, I think Jimmy can speak on that a bit more. I'm more so involved with the Feed the People Market Stand. I got
Okay.
involved with it during its pilot year in 2022 as a volunteer helping Jimmy, and then I was one of the main interns who ran it this past fall.
Got it. Jimmy, can you explain a little bit about the food pantry?
Yeah, so the Lions Pantry, right now I'm actually the engagement director of the Lions Pantry. And so it's a physical location like the farm. It's kind of near the farm in like the northern part of campus, kind of above East Halls. And basically, people come in, anybody with a Penn State ID can come in and pick up perishable and non-perishable items. And we were able to take the produce that was not distributed in the central location of the market stand, which was around the hub, and there was a pilot location across from East Halls. We were able to take that excess produce that was not distributed at that location to the Lions Pantry for our pantry guests to pick up.
So, what does the Lion Pantry have in terms of food options for students?
So right now they're expanding their options, but I think we're proud to say that we have dairy products right now. So we have some non-perishable items. We have a lot of frozen meals. So there are some frozen meals, a popular one we have is like there's like Indian frozen meals. There's like a tikka masala frozen meal. And then there's something else along those lines. It's like those. Then we have a bunch of non-perishable items. Like canned goods, but we also have soups, and we have cereals, we have like baking products like flour, and then we have pasta, and then kind of non-perishable items like diapers, and this is not even non-perishable, this is kind of grocery items. This is like diapers, shampoo, conditioner, and hygiene products.
Okay, so you noticed something, that there was something missing in this mix,
Yeah,
right?
definitely,
And
yeah.
so what was that?
Definitely like the option to have that fresh produce and everything. So
Got it.
that's kind of where the need between the farmers market with the student farm and the collaborative with the Lions Pantry was put into place.
Okay,
So
excellent.
that was the main kind of driver to collab the two programs.
Okay, so just before we get into the stand, and I'd love to hear about what how you got to the stand and everything that went into it. Why is, I mean, why aren't fresh fruits and vegetables originally part of the Lion's Pantry or the food pantry?
Mm-hmm. So the Lion's Pantry, I mean, Leslie was actually also was, I think, some the advisor of the Lion's Pantry before it was, before it had like a paid advisor. So before it had a paid director. So Leslie also probably is very familiar with some of these issues. But when we got refrigeration and stuff, we very much relied on the current food network at Penn State. So between the delivering service between the convenience stores on campus, so there's like, for example, there's a convenience store in one of in like the dining halls. And we very much rely on that type of inventory and that, I guess, merchandiser, I guess you would call it, that distributor is where we get the majority of our kind of food. So a lot of the stuff that you would see in the student dining areas is stuff that's also in the food pantry. And mm-hmm. that really does not typically include fresh produce.
Right, right. And Leslie, if you might also jump in, I mean, one of the challenges is facilities, you know, to have space for storage and particularly for fresh fruits and vegetables, you need that facility requirement, refrigeration, et cetera. Was that one of the reasons also that, you know, you had a limited scope or limited type of products that could be available in the food pantry, in the Lion's
yeah.
pantry?
Yeah, and just to confirm, as Jimmy said, yeah, I was an advisor for the pantry for several years, but it was not my full-time job. I was directing the farm program and then advising the Lions Pantry Club students and trying to support them. But in that move toward expanding the facilities and adding refrigeration and freezer space so that we could handle and store, you know, a whole suite of perishable products, along the way, it was when we were able to hire and add a full-time staff person to support the pantry's work. So just adding that staff oversight was another key piece in the process. And then ultimately, there are, you know, health and safety requirements, regulations, as far as temperature monitoring and only keeping products for a certain amount of time before they have to be disposed of or, you know, checked for potential degradation. That requires some extra certifications and oversight that were not necessary during just having the time when they just had shelf stable items.
Really interesting. Yeah. So you got a multitude of factors coming in as you start to expand the type of products that you keep in food pantries, such as the Lion Pantry, for instance.
Yeah. I'll add one thing. There is kind of a unique one way that helps us with the Feed the People Market Stand regulation doesn't necessarily play such an important role is that as a farm, we obviously are able to and allowed to handle fresh produce and store it and distribute it and such. So health and food safety regulation, consider it a difference when you're providing whole, you know, uncut, unsliced produce versus if we were to start like chopping it and providing like pre-sliced or pre-cut things. And so that created an opportunity where we could offer this farm stand on campus because as a farm, we already have the food safety and food handling practices in place for our whole uncut produce that's coming straight from our own farm.
Got it. Jimmy and Rebecca, from a student perspective, did you hear sort of this call for fresh foods, if you want to call it, or do you think that students felt the need for it, or there wasn't any sort of such need, but it was sort of a more like a vision that we need to do this?
I think that it was very much a need to establish fresh produce options on campus, whether it be for those that cannot necessarily afford going to the dining hall for every meal, or those that are just maybe on campus and have a long period of time before they return home to eat. And as they were saying, within the commons, there's a convenience store. And in those convenience stores, they do not offer fresh, uncut produce. It's always packaged in these plastic containers. And sometimes it's not necessarily fresh because it's processed or it's even expired. And just being able to provide students with something that is fresh and almost technically organic based on the student farm's practices is something that is very much needed, especially to just provide a nutritious diet here on campus.
Interesting. Okay, so now let's talk about your project. So first of all, tell me a little bit about what is it called and what was its purpose?
So the project is the Feed the People Market Stand, right? So the purpose, I guess, when we were founding it was to kind of tie the food systems together in a charitable way. So, you know, right now, at that point, we just had the student farm and the Lions Pantry, you know, and there was kind of some areas where I thought it was a little disjointed and maybe there could be more of a collaboration. And the food, that stand gave us it was actually very inspiring to me, actually, because a lot of people would come up and they would like eat the produce right in front of me, you know, and they'd be like, wow, like I love this, you know, and they did it in a way that it was kind of like they had been starved of like the joy a little bit of just having fresh things. And then also there were a lot of grad students who were very thankful as well, who were like, I didn't really know about the resources of the Lions Pantry. I didn't really know about the resources of the Cup Pantries, which are kind of smaller forms of the Lions Pantry around campus. So it gave me a tangible space and it gave the volunteers a tangible space to talk about connecting people with resources. Also by giving them basically free food if they chose to, you know, donate or not. It was a conversation starter and I think it left people very inspired and it made Penn State maybe a little bit more hopeful. I think maybe living in an agriculture area, like we should have more emphasis on fresh food, but unfortunately, you know, we really don't.
Right.
So I think that was a big driver for that. Yeah.
So just to clarify, the food that is on the stand and available is still free. So it's sort of an extension of Lions Pantry.
The food is pay what you can model. So if you choose not to pay anything, it's $0. But if you choose to pay $100 for a head of lettuce, you can also do that. There's no set prices on anything.
I see. Got it. Understood. Okay. So how did you set this up?
So when we first started it, it was definitely a lot of meetings. I was having like meetings over the summer. I was like driving to Canada for like a little trip. And I was like on meetings with the buildings and grounds people who were talking to me about all this stuff, about everything, how basically in the event that the entire hub exploded, would the tent of the farm stand be secured by sandbags? So basically, I mean, not really, but basically there was a ton of meetings to work with the buildings and grounds people. And it really went from there with Leslie behind the scenes with a lot of the harvesting and managing the volunteers. Another farm club or farm staff members, Darren Rip, and he organized the volunteers. His name's Darren Rip, and he organized the volunteers for the morning of and the night before to get that food ready and prepped for the farm stand. So it was really a lot of behind the scenes work. And I was really upfront with volunteers like Rebecca that first year we did it, to get that moving, after all the reservations, all the setting up and the buying of the stuff after the grant. So it all kind of culminated into that stand with those loose prices, those prices that really have little to no emphasis.
So you talked about where it's located. So you had to sort of come up with the physical, establishing the physical location of the stand.
Yeah.
And then, so to the audience who has never been to the Penn State campus, give us an idea of where it's located in context of the campus.
So the hub is a relatively central point. It's like a southern central point of the campus. And the student farm is where the food came from, and that was from like a northern point of campus, like on the highway, basically, like past rolling fields, but it's still technically on the campus. And the food was harvested on this very northern right top tip of the campus and transported to the hub, which is a central southern point of the campus, and sold. We kind of operated between the outdoor front entrance of the hub. So that's an outdoor location. And then we also reserved indoor on the first floor of the hub at the back entrance. So it's okay. Definitely a central location and a pretty large, probably one of the largest buildings on campus. With a lot
it was able to give the students more accessibility. So, someone who hasn't been on campus, that location is very heavy on traffic when it comes to back and forth across the campus. You know, that was very smart. Yeah. So what was some of the challenges out of the way. What were some of the fun challenges that you had to face to create the stand? Besides the meetings that you said about, right?
Yeah.
So, convincing people that this was the right place.
I think Leslie could probably talk more about the challenges of the harvesting and then, you know, what was available at the time. But I would definitely say consistent availability was a challenge. The how much we would be offering the food. So like how often we would be offering the food. And recruitment of the volunteers was kind of a challenge in the beginning, but it eventually leveled off as it got more popular within the club. So those were probably the three challenges that I could think of. And I think Leslie could probably elaborate more on the harvesting as having been a challenge.
I actually think Rebecca could chime in on that because we firmed up the ordering process this year. And so Rebecca did orders each week from the farm. And I think it was much more streamlined and improved. But Rebecca, you are the one that actually did the ordering.
Yeah. So I guess with ordering this year, it was, I don't want to say it was competition based, but it kind of was, because this is like the remaining produce that doesn't go to the dining halls and people that we already have like contracts with. It also goes to the Penn Stater, and it also goes to Leslie. What's the other location? Sorry.
We run a CSA program and then sell to the Penn Stater, the Village, and to the campus dining commons, which includes like the hub dining and Bryce Jordan Center and such as well.
So between... Penn Stater is the hotel that Penn State runs, is part of the Penn State community, if you want to call it. And then the Village is a local housing community that is also in many ways connected to Penn State through different channels, but not an official part of Penn State.
It's an affiliated organization it's a retirement community.
Retirement community, thank you. And then the dining halls, of course, are the dining halls. Got it. Okay, Rebecca, sorry, continue.
So, no, that's okay. So between it was the Village and the Penn Stater, we were getting like the remaining produce, and I was always the last one that was able to order. So it was 6 p.m. the day before the stand would take place. So I never necessarily knew what was going to be available. Tomatoes were always a quick to go, and so were peppers. So sometimes it would just be hit or miss on what would be at the stand each week, just based on the availability from the farm and what other organizations were ordering. And then additionally, another struggle was just within the hub and getting that consistent location, because it is such a high traffic area. Other student orgs also really desired being at those tables.
Interesting. Wow. I have so many questions, so I'm going to try and narrow them down in my head to what I think would be most interesting. So now you have the stand and you have sort of the quote unquote business model of it. Logistics aside, how did you manage, you know, things such as cash? Because now you're dealing with things that you would otherwise not deal with on a day-to-day basis as a student, right? You're running an organization. Were there any other challenges that you faced once you got the location, you got the food, and hopefully people are coming in? Anything you want to add, Jimmy or Rebecca?
You were discussing payments. I'm actually the Student Farm Club's treasurer, so I do also get to handle money quite often. So we had cash as a donation option. We also accepted check, and we also accepted Venmo or Lion Cash. And for those that don't know, Lion Cash is the alternative payment that students and faculty receive and can put onto their like student ID card. It isn't dining hall dollars, but it's just like the next equivalent. Mm-hmm. And
nice show.
We accepted all of those payments, but even then, for those that felt obligated to pay, even though it was under the pay what you can model, they may not have had those options. They may have had something like PayPal or another payment. And that was sometimes a struggle. And then we always had to try and reassure them, like, it was okay to take free produce. And a lot of people were not okay with that option, which was kind of upsetting.
That's fascinating, right? Okay, so you opened up another area that I thought we could keep for another day, but how did they react? I guess that's one way of saying what you did say. Did you have a lot of people paying what you thought was the fair market price of those products? Or do you think, if you were to just sort of do a mental math, would most people pay, you think, more than what they should have paid? Or they paid because they really didn't want to take food for free?
Based on the calculations we did, a lot of people paid right about our suggested price. So we had a suggested price board just to give people an idea of like what would be a viable donation amount for a head of lettuce, a single pepper. And most people tried to stick to that because they just felt that they were not necessarily food insecure, even though I would argue all students on campus can be considered food insecure. We are paying so much money to go to college and educate ourselves. But most people tried to stick to that price. We had some community members that would come in and pay over that price as it was a donation. And then we would still have some students that would come and take it for free.
Okay. Jimmy, anything you want to add to that?
I would say, I mean, I'm not sure about the calculations, but I would say people were definitely, as Rebecca said, very guilty. And they didn't quite understand why we were giving it away for free at the beginning. At least that was my thing. They were like not quite understanding why we were giving stuff away for free, especially international students. So international students come and they're like, why are people giving me free produce? Is this poison? they were really confused. But I think once I kind of was like, look, like you have an ID here. You're paying. I mean, not everybody's paying to be here, but you are spending your time here. And Penn State has either recruited you for lab work or research, and you are kind of, you are given the same privileges as everybody else, whether you're, you know, not paying to go to school here, you're an international student, or you're an undergrad paying probably a boatload of money. So, once I reassured people, they were more apt to take it. And I guess just unrelated, I just want to clarify, Rebecca did the farm stand this fall. So I wasn't here this fall. And I did it the first fall, and I was like kind of the pilot model. And Rebecca definitely refined a lot of the kinks. And Rebecca, you know, worked a lot on things that we suggested for improvement. So Rebecca definitely knows like the new stage, and I definitely know like the older kinks involved, like buildings and grounds people freaking out. So that's kind of the difference between Rebecca and I, the year difference.
Got it. So actually that leads me to my next question, is how are you going to ensure that it continues as you'd started and as you would hope that it does? You know, what are some of the things that would make a difference between it being sustainable, no pun intended here, but, you know, and not drop off?
I feel like Rebecca and I probably, I mean, Rebecca and I are both juniors, so we're probably going to work together next semester, I imagine, to kind of co-work the farm. I'm the engagement director of the Lions Pantry. So I'm thinking about kind of making that a highlight volunteer activity between the Lions Pantry as something that could get the club involved with food systems. And there's quite a bit of new work at the food systems in the food systems area at Penn State. We also have the Food Recovery Network, which is, I was just at my Alliance Pantry shift this morning, and I saw probably, and I took a picture of probably 30 to 50 containers of leftover dining hall food that is probably is fully gone within the first half hour that the Lions Pantry opened this morning. And it was like 40 circular to-go containers of food from the dining hall. So there is quite a bit of traction for these types of food justice campaigns on campus. So Rebecca and I will have one last opportunity next year to really drive this home. But I do believe there's going to be a lot more cohesion between the Food Recovery Network, Student Farm Club, and Lions Pantry with a Canvas course that's being put together by the executive directors of both orgs of, or actually all three organizations. And that will really put a lot of cohesion and add a lot more support for our food justice projects.
Interesting. That is so fascinating. Leslie, anything from sort of the administrative end that you think will need to happen to ensure such a project continues?
Funding is always helpful.
Yeah.
We would like for the positions, the students managing the market stand, ideally to always be paid in terms of equity and, you know, financial stability for students. Being able to offer those as paid opportunities is, I think, really helpful and valuable. Given that we are a university and students are earning degrees, we have some flexibility in that and can offer credit for students who are needing that experience as well, and giving them the opportunity to engage at the market stand. But, you know, of course, funding is always helpful. And at this time, too, for us as a farm program, we've really just kind of woven it into our overall operations, and it would be difficult to extract the labor, but there obviously is some labor represented in the production, the harvesting, the packing, the management of all that produce coming in from the farm to the market stand. And that's, like I said, it'd be hard to differentiate that cost from all the other operations happening on the farm, but it is there, it is embedded in the project. So some level of financial account, or, you know, accounting for that would be helpful for the long term.
Yeah, really good point. I mean, you know, funding is extremely important for such projects. Okay, so please hang in there. We are at that point where we'd like to share a quiz question with our listeners, and then we're going to jump right back into the discussion. I want to talk to you a little bit about your perspectives about food insecurity on our campus, and, you know, how this project, you know, what this project means from that point of view. So here's our quiz question for our listeners. So which country can claim the least level of food insecurity? So we're talking a little bit more on the broader scale from a national level point of view. Which country can claim the least level of food insecurity? We'll have the answer at the end of our discussion. Okay, Rebecca, I've been wanting to ask you earlier on, and it might be a good place to start. What got you interested in working on this project?
So as Jimmy said, he started it with the pilot version in the fall of 2022. And I was very involved in the Student Farm Club. It was my first semester as the treasurer. And I wanted to be more involved with some other projects going on. And so I signed up to be a volunteer. I was a reoccurring volunteer every week. I would help Jimmy with the pilot market stand. And I just very thoroughly enjoyed seeing people get so excited about fresh produce. And that really drove me to apply for the intern position then for the fall of 2023, and just being like the main manager of it for this year.
You know, you both have some level of understanding or not. I guess it's my question, before you started on the food stand, what was your understanding of food insecurity on the campus? And how did that change once you got involved with the food stand project, the free food stand project? Jimmy?
So before I was involved with this particular project, I was pretty familiar with how food insecurity looked at the Lions Pantry. So, but before the Lions Pantry, I think would be a better place to start for me in particular.
Sure.
I would say I did not realize how little support graduate students had. A lot of graduate students have close to zero support from their families financially. And I think a lot of people are picturing these programs to just be kind of undergrad, like just an undergrad bubble. But it really ends up, and a lot of people who are staff who are, I had one time I had a medical student come in, and I'm not sure where that was. I think maybe they were doing residency at that hospital nearby, but I had a medical student come into the food pantry. And I have, you know, there's like a lot of aspiring lawyers coming into the food pantry. So it's a lot of people who really in a couple years don't plan to be continuing users of things like the food pantry and poverty alleviation support systems. So things like that were not really what I had originally thought.
Rebecca?
I would say before any involvement with the student farm, I really did not have a grasp on food insecurity. And I can say that I was very privileged in that nature, that my parents really hid any kind of food insecurity I faced at home, or just made it not seem like that big of a deal. So that whenever I first came to college is when I started to maybe talk with some of my friends, whether they be freshmen up until graduate students, and learning about how difficult it was to access like grocery stores or just the pricing of food in general.
You know, some of the things that we have learned, whether it's through research or by speaking. So tell me if any of these ring a bell, that, you know, food insecurity does play a role when it comes to, let's say, academic experience of these students. And not all of them are willing to come and actually get help because of the stigma factor. What was your experience with those two aspects? Or if at all you heard anything as you were engaging with everyone?
I do see quite a big stigma every day at the food pantry. And I do think that the farm stand, at least in its nature, in a central place with people of all kind of financial background picking up produce there, it did alleviate some of the stigma, because people, especially with the pay what you can, some people just paid nothing. And it was really kind of discreet when I was doing it. It was just kind of, you know, you either paid or you didn't pay and nobody said anything. You just offered to pay if you'd like to pay. And if you did not pay, nobody was asking you, do you want to pay? So that was something that was actually an original kink we had to work out. Leslie and I were talking about that when we first started. We were talking about the like verbiage we would use and like the interactions we would have in terms of payment and in terms of like limits and stuff. And we just didn't end up imposing anything, basically. And we just had a laid back approach to the whole situation. But I do see quite a bit of stigma at the food pantry. And I think there is of course, there's a huge stigma with all this type of stuff, because you don't want to look like you can't buy food. I wish I could say that there would be a solution to that, but to be honest with you, I don't really think there is, which is why the discretion is very important.
To that point, right. No, that's a really good point. And then the fact that, you know, you made a good point that because it was a central location, there was that, you know, there was no how do you say, there was no mystery in the fact that what the purpose of the stand was, and it was okay. It was sort of normalized because you're right in the middle of the campus.
Exactly.
Rebecca, did you experience instances where things could have, you thought that things could have been framed differently to avoid confusion and therefore maybe potential embarrassment, or there were some things that you did right that actually made it more easy or accessible for folks to come in and you know, get food.
Yeah. I don't think there was necessarily a level of embarrassment for anyone not understanding like the pay what you can model. It was just more so people couldn't fathom that they could take it for free. And we always tried like changing our verbatim and trying to make them understand like you can just take it, or just trying to not say anything. But then they'd be like, oh, how much do I owe? How much do I owe? And trying to explain them like, hey, you can do the math yourself. Like you don't owe us anything, but if you feel obligated, we have suggested pricing. And it was always very difficult to just get them to accept that they didn't have to. They could literally have handed us a $1 bill and it would have been fine. But most people would spend a lot of time trying to do the math or trying to ask us how much they owed. And there was never a level of embarrassment, which was great. And people were very calm about like this idea of trying to figure out their own pricing. But I really do wish that at least maybe going into next year, as people kind of grasp the idea of the pay what you can model, that into next year, it will be more accepted to take things for less or nothing of what is like suggested, I guess.
Right. Okay. You know, you both talked about student advocacy and justice and food justice. So I want to come back to that. But before I do, Leslie, I just wanted to ask you, you know, this is an interesting, and maybe if I'm misunderstanding this or misplacing it, correct me, but this is such an interesting example of a project where university administration, staff, I don't know how much faculty was involved in this, but definitely the students sort of came together to you know, organically try and solve a problem, of course, led by students such as Jimmy and Rebecca. Is that, you know, am I making that right? Sort of, am I constructing it in the right way? Or how would you say, if you were to say that the recipe made it work, what should be the right ingredients for a project like that, that kind of came up organically?
Yeah, good question. I think that this particular initiative is a valuable and important component of a campus's overall strategies to address food insecurity. Having initiatives that are very, you know, student-centered and student-led is going to help create a more welcoming space for other students. Even just, you know, knowing that the hub is a great space, the student union here at Penn State is a great space to be in front of a lot of students, and that their like fellow students are expecting to see students tabling at a space in the hub. Whereas I think if there were staff running the stand and tabling, that would be perceived as kind of odd, and students would be less likely to even stop by. So I think it is important in that regard. Obviously, there's a lot of other things that need to happen across campuses, advocating at the state level and federal level for better access to SNAP, educating students about who can access SNAP, other, you know, pantries and things, dining dollars, donating surplus dining dollars. And a lot of these are things that do happen on our own campus, financial literacy courses, et cetera. So some of those other areas I think are important for a professional staff to run and maintain, but really anywhere that there's opportunity for students, it's in turn leadership and learning for them. I mean, like Rebecca and Jimmy have been saying, participating in the management of this program and this stand is hugely eye-opening. And it doesn't stop with just them. That's something that they then talk with their friends about as well, and kind of further that understanding of the issue and what's going on our campus. So I think they're all important. And I think our students, you know, knowing Jimmy and Rebecca really well and many others, really, really want to be at the center of addressing the challenges and helping everybody understand solutions moving forward.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I want to end the discussion. Actually, I piggyback on what you just said, Leslie. Jimmy, Rebecca, if you had to make an ask to your colleagues, your friends there at Penn State, given what you said, you know, the food justice aspects. First of all, do you think if other students had a better understanding of what food insecurity means for students on campus, do you think they would get more involved? And to that point, what would be your ask? How would you pitch them getting more engaged in solving this challenge?
I first would just like to quickly kind of define what I think food insecurity is. So I think food insecurity is not just the quantity of food. I think it has a lot to do with the nutritional value of the food and kind of its sourcing. So you are food insecure if you get 2,000 calories every day, each day on like bread. If all you have access to is bread and that's what you're eating 2,000 calories of, you are food insecure. Another thing is, in terms of getting involved, it is quite difficult because food sourcing is kind of, for a big reason in the United States, very undercover and very kind of obscured from the public, in my opinion. I think it's definitely a very obscured thing. So my biggest thing, and this is what I tell my friends, and this is what I tell everybody, a lot of people, is if you are friends with somebody who's from a different like culture, who's like not American usually, so people who are like immigrants, go to their house and see what they're cooking. Because a lot of the food that we eat and a lot of food that a lot of Americans eat is kind of boring and it makes people kind of uninspired to be eating. So if you have friends and people who know how to cook, especially different cultures, I would recommend going to their house and like making a fun day out of cooking, going to the grocery store, trying to get raw ingredients as best you can and cooking cultural food together. I think that's the best way to solve food insecurity. If you can, you know, it's definitely hard, but that's like the best low cost, good taste, high nutritional way I could think of to limit food insecurity.
With food insecurity, I think the idea is waste not, want not. I know many people who are way too privileged and throw away way too much. And I just think of everybody who does not have access to that. And it is really frustrating. And I think the biggest way to get people involved with addressing food insecurity and maybe volunteering at events like this would be get to know more people, understand their backstory and where they come from, because you may not realize it, but a lot of people struggle to eat properly and nutritiously. And then to also just have a passion for food. But like Jimmy is saying, food, it really is a life changer whenever you're passionate about it and when you love to eat. And whenever you love to eat, nothing goes to waste. People are more better fed nutritionally well and getting along better in their academic and personal lives.
You know, you both spoke so eloquently about first of all, how food insecurity is such a broad concept construct. And then I really like the way that you positively talked about encouraging rather than the gloom and doom that often is associated with it, that, you know, this is an extremely critical element of life. And then so be engaged. Very inspiring. Jimmy, Rebecca, thank you for everything that you're doing. This is so inspiring for everyone. And it was so nice to talk to you about that. And Leslie, as always, you know, you've always been supportive of the student project, and this is just an incredible extension of that effort. So thank you all for being part of the discussion. Before we go, I'd love to share the answer with you all for the quiz question. By the way, I was going to say that towards the end also, but if anyone on listening to the podcast is interested to be involved, or if you are not at Penn State and like what you heard Jimmy and Rebecca and Leslie talk about, then please do get in touch with us, or you can directly get in touch with them. They were covered extensively in a recent Penn State University news article also, and I'm sure they would be glad to talk to you about the project. Okay, so the answer to our question, from today is the country with the least amount of food insecurity is Finland. Finland is ranked as number one on the Global Food Security Index with a value of 83.7 out of 100. This is based on its combined ranking on the other four aspects of food security, which are affordability, availability, quality and safety, and sustainability and adaptation. And you heard about all of those in different ways in our part today. And not surprisingly, its score is the highest on affordability. Now, what's interesting is the other part, I'm sure you might be wondering where the United States is. We are ranked number 13 on the list, 13, with an index of 78. And this will not be a surprise to you based on what Jimmy mentioned earlier, based on our discussion also, that we scored the least on availability index of 65.1. I think Jimmy mentioned the obscurity of food and things around it. Were any of you surprised by those findings or the results? Yeah, I know. Leslie is making an unhappy face, and yes, I agree with you. We can do better than 13. Well, thank you again for taking the time to be on the pod. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you.
Well, this was an interesting. Thank you. Thank you again. For those of you listening to the pod, please share it with two or more people if you think this will benefit them from listening to it. And as always, make safe and informed food choices. Above all, please stay healthy and cheerful. Until next time, from the All In Food Studios, this is Amit Sharma. Thank you for listening.